Hey y'all, welcome to the Diary 101 podcast. I am your host, Aka Kandelua Kandepwe, also known as Aka. Yo, still my favorite thing on the podcast. I don't know how I feel about it the next few weeks or months, but it's like my favorite intro. And as it is, it's a good day to have a good guest on it, to have a good guest here with me. When I reached out to this person, I was like, I was part of one of your sessions and I really liked the conversation. We connected on LinkedIn and I was like, would you like to be a guest? And the first thing she said was, you are my Susi sister. And I was just like, yay, Lord. Still grateful for Susi for sifting me out and making some of these things easy for me to reach out. She's like one of the nicest, vibrant person I have met so far. We've had conversations before this and she really does inspire me. Her work is something we're still discovering and learning more in Zambia. And I'm really excited to just dive into this conversation with her and hope you guys enjoy it. So hi, Precious.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Susi sister.
Hi, sister. I have to admit, that was my favorite thing about meeting you on Instagram.
I know. I had to look you up. I'm just like, who is Aka? And then the next, no, I like that you actually put it on your profile, like Susi. And I'm just like,
I don't think I'll ever remove it.
No wonder.
It's like, I don't think I'll ever remove it because when I was in America, they say that when you go back to your home countries, you're going to meet other Susi sisters and it's going to be a cool community and you guys are just going to connect instantly. And then you saw that and because honestly, don't know me, I'm just reaching out. And you're like, okay, cool, this looks cool, but I wouldn't want to just speak to anybody. I get that. And you just go like, you're a Susi. And I'm like, yes, they were right. I'll always keep it just to make a little more things more easier for me.
Yeah. I think just the power of networking, the power of community. When you find that one thing that brings two people together or many people together, build on it and just be like, you know what? We have this in common. Let's be friends. That's all. I think it should be as easy as that. Like, oh, we have this in common. Let's be friends. We are both breathing and human. Let's be friends.
Right, and you brought something up, community and networking. I think what these fellowships do is just distinguish you from others, and you get to meet your people because they are. I'm curious to know your Susi experience and what year you were in. You're curious to know how has the program grown, and there's like you're like, oh no, like I was there these many years, and there are now people younger than me experiencing what I experienced. How is it now? What are the differences? So it's just really amazing that so much time has passed, but we really just connected because of that one thing.
I know. I just think we're part of something so big, like more than, now that I think about it, just, okay, it hasn't been 10 years, but I'm just thinking 10 years from now, the community that would have built, the number of girls that would have gone on the program, coming back, making an impact. What if we all just like met up? What if we all started doing things together? But I know Susi, wherever they are, they're always making an impact. Susi are leaders everywhere. And just the power of community and leveraging on that. And I think Susi is doing good things, like wherever Susi is, and just the program itself, the fact that it has continued and just how they pick the leaders is something that, like, wherever I see somebody who's like, I'm a Susi person, I'm just like, girl, you must be a transformational leader in your community. So I'm coming to appreciate Susi even the more. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. What year were you?
Third year at uni. I was at the Copperbelt University at that time. So I did my Susi program in 2016. between the periods of June to the first week of August. It was a 5-week program at that time. And for me, the exchange program was done at the University of Delaware.
I went to Kansas. I heard about the Delaware dynamics, but I also heard it was really nice because Kansas as a university is so pretty. Like, I'm so tempted. It's like, I'm like, yes.
Ooh.
Can we have conversations with universities in Zambia already?
Oh my God. Oh yeah, that's how I felt as well. I'm just like, you know what? We could change a lot of things. Oh, wait. One of the things that I saw at the University of Delaware for the first time in my life was it had a nursing room. So I'm like, what is a nursing room? Like, it was so strange. But I took naps there because sometimes the time difference and the first days were a bit hectic. I'm like over lunch, going to the nursing room for a power nap. And oh my God. They had the mascot, the Blue Hens. I remember that. Yeah.
So one of the things I noticed at Kansas was they had an art gallery.
Wow.
And I was like, damn, I'm gone. I was just like, so my Unilas doesn't want to have an art gallery.
What? And just bring up the proposal.
I will. I'm in talks at this point. Uh-huh. But yes, like they had an art gallery and it was so beautiful. We had a class there one afternoon. And I'm just like, we're having a class in an art gallery? Guys, wait.
Wow.
What's going on? They also had their lake and their mascot is called a Jayhawk. So it's like, oof. That's like a different standard. It's like,
yeah.
It's like they're speaking a language we're not speaking, but it's also a lot to learn from. What's your favorite experience being part of SUSE when you're in America?
My favorite experience, I'd say there were so many because we visited so many states. Oh, my favorite experience was having to create a project. So one thing the program does is they help you work on your own leadership project, something that you would want to pursue when you come back home. I enjoyed working on that. I'm just like, I never knew I could do this. I could actually do research, close up some gaps, solve a problem, and get the help. And I'm just like, because I thought, of course I knew I was a leader, but then I never had that confidence to implement certain projects. I didn't know what it actually meant, but then they gave me the tools and empowered me. And when I came back, I felt so empowered. I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna change this. I had all this energy. And just being in an environment with other young ladies who were passionate about creating change in Zambia fueled that up. So that was my favorite thing because I came back with a different mindset. I was challenged in the right ways. It was like iron sharpens iron. I felt sharpened. That was, I think, one of the experiences that I love. And I think that's why I appreciate the program, because I think everyone has something in them. But then for someone to recognize that, for someone to say, okay, you are a leader, but here are the tools that you need. Because I think we have so many leaders in our society, so many brothers and sisters and friends, but then we do not have the tools that we need to make that impact. So I really appreciate that they gave me those tools. They gave me frameworks to use. They taught me how to leverage your networking skills, fundraising, all these things, and resources, which I really appreciate. That was my favorite thing about the program. Yeah.
You just mentioned something. I forgot to mention that because you're my SUSE sister.
Yeah.
You're part of the Passport series, and I've been collecting stories of different SUSE sisters around the world that I'm glad I met you randomly. But like, that's like one of my favorite thing about the podcast is that I would like all the SUSEs around the world to listen to this podcast and say, I was with Precious at Delaware. I'm glad Precious is thriving, and I'd like to connect and work with her on something. Because like that's what the Passport series is about. And you mentioned something about TUS. So the SUSE program is now called Study for the US Institute, Madeleine Albright Young Leaders Program, Young Women's Program. I know it's so long. I'm proud that I still remember that. And so when we did the SUSE program, we had the part where we talked about Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State, and how she had certain tools in her toolbox, right? And you just mentioned to say,
yeah,
she gave you some tools that helped you thrive when you came back home. Could you tell me about some of the tools you got and some you still use in this day and age?
So some tools that we need, right? I would say some of these tools were things like leadership frameworks and things around having to understand how to build a team, how to make a budget, communication, and fundraising. So with these, we were able to understand, have templates on creating budgets, have the skills that you need on how to raise funds as an NGO, because most of the projects that we were working on were give back projects for our communities. And most of the challenges would be, oh, I do not have funds, I do not have resources, I do not know where to start. But then all these came back to, okay, this is how you go about fundraising with organizations. You have to write and reach out to them this way. These are organizations that you can find. These are websites that you can go to in terms of seeking funding. So those are some of the tools that we learned. In terms of communication, we did a lot of practical work around communication, how to voice out, how to be heard, how to speak articulatively and people hear you, how to make a point. And it was in those small exercises. I vividly remember one exercise where we were just talking about girls and empowerment and just saying no. And this was a small exercise, like you had to pair up with somebody and then the person is saying yes and you say no. They say yes and you say no. They say yes until one person overpowers the other. So after that, I just realized that, because I would easily just, when someone says yes, no, and that's it. But then just continuously, yes, no, yes, no, no. So like until your no means no. That was the point of the whole exercise. So such things really helped me understand the power of communication, being articulate. The other tools were also team building, identifying what you need in a team. So identifying if you need somebody in finance, identifying if you how to get people on your team, volunteering, what it means, the different ways to remunerate a volunteer. So all these things are things I did know because I was a leader, of course, but then I simply did what I did out of passion. I didn't have structure. I didn't have a plan. I was just out there being me and making an impact. But then this brought a certain level of structure, organization, that equipped me to do things differently after the SUSE program. So these are some of the tools that I got through the program.
Love that you did the yes no exercise. I can imagine how loud that room was. Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that must have been loud. Are you connected to any of your SUSE sisters? Apart from me now, yeah, but yeah.
Yes. So my SUSE sisters in Zambia, we do keep in touch. One of them is Mary. And right now, I know she's working with an organization in Zambia. She's in marketing. She's doing amazing things. I'm in touch as well with Ngosa. Ngosa is, I remember, we're on WhatsApp together. So like once in a while, you pop in, you say hi. Those are mostly the sister sisters I've kept in touch with. We do have a WhatsApp chat, but it's more of a bigger pool, with more alumni, including Yali. And another WhatsApp chat that I have was, I think in 2019, there was a Susie cohort that was going, and they had all these questions, and I'm telling them what to pack, what not to pack, what hairstyles to do. It goes as detailed as that. Like, this is the hairstyle you should do when you
But
travel.
it stays for the 5 weeks.
Yes. Like, and everyone will be
Yeah,
asking you, where did you do your hair from? I'm like, yeah.
the
Yeah, my other
world
Susie
that
sister, I'll say that, like, please go ahead.
No, I wanted to say that the world is such a small place that Inongosa is Inongosa, and I'm just
Yes. Yes.
like one of my favorite people, and I'm just like, Ngosa, Precious, yay! I'll text her after this. I'm like, I was like doing this with Precious. Can you imagine? She knows I'm
My
so
God.
obsessed.
Please, you need to bring us on the podcast.
I will, son.
You should. Oh, we could do like a whole Susie Reunited podcast.
Yes,
That would
yes.
be interesting.
That would be very interesting if I could get a few of you guys. From your cohort, even others from different countries, and just see how we could break it down. Because I plan to do that for my cohort, like we're clocking a year. And when everybody's schedules align, I'm going to bring some of them on board so that we can just talk about the past year for us and what it meant for us to go to America, come back home, work. So yeah, we will do that.
Oh, beautiful, 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 beautiful. Yeah, it's a brilliant idea.
One of the most interesting things about you is you've gone into an industry that's not touched in Zambia. Like it's not really, it's too raw. You know, I would say I met you through ZAM, Zambian
Oh,
Association of
yeah.
Manufacturers. I'm doing this session. And yeah, I joined in and I was like, oh, cool. I was biased because I love them already. But the session was so informative because I'm setting up a business. I do not know what type of patents or anything I need. I just know that I need to register with PAKRA. But PAKRA has so many services they offer. And I only understand how to set up a company because I learned that in school. And
Yeah.
you're here teaching about the other side of PAKRA that as Zambians, we don't pay attention to. So it's like very interesting that you've gone into an industry that's very raw but has so much potential. Like, what inspired you?
Yeah. So, in terms of industry, I'm in the IP industry, intellectual property. What inspired me was, I didn't actually plan on this. So I was pursuing my undergraduate at Copperbelt University, and it was in my fourth year when we had electives, and I had the opportunity to select electives. In my fourth year, some of the electives I took were intellectual property, entrepreneurship. Yeah, those were my electives, intellectual property and entrepreneurship. And when I took the intellectual property class, from day one, like literally from day one, I was just wowed. This was me entering class, and my lecturer enters class and he says, intellectual property is all around us. When you woke up, the toothpaste that you use, the cereal that you use, that's all intellectual property around us. And that just wowed me. I mean, class and I was like, oh. And I got fascinated by intellectual property since day one of class, and started to put the thread and needle together on just seeing how intellectual property ties into our world and see the world from a perspective of intellectual property and innovation. Because intellectual property on its own is a facet of the law that helps protect ideas, that helps protect innovation, that drives innovation. And I had friends in engineering who were doing projects for their final year, dissertations. And for them, they were engineers. And so they would create these beautiful things. And I would be curious to know, I'm like, oh, so how do you know anything around intellectual property or patents? And for them, it was more like, I'm just going to do this project and I'm just going to graduate. And they didn't take the course. And I was worried. I'm like, okay, this is very important, but why aren't engineers learning about intellectual property? I think everyone should know, because for me, I viewed it from a perspective that these are rights. The way we treat human rights, everyone needs to know, access their rights. Intellectual property are rights that belong to somebody that they need to know and be aware of. And it was in 2019, around April, we have World Intellectual Property Day across the world. And World Intellectual Property Organization has this map online, and they post activities around the world on what is happening. And when I went to the website, I didn't see Zambia, and that hurt me. It stings. Like, why are we not there? And it bothered me so much that I wrote to World Intellectual Property Organization. I reached out to them on Facebook because they posted this map as well on Facebook. They're like, oh, these are the regions celebrating intellectual property. And Zambia wasn't there on the map. And I wrote to them like, hey, why isn't Zambia there? And then they're like, oh, we do not have any submission. No activities have been submitted. And I'm like, I'm going to host an activity because I wanted to see Zambia on the map. I just wanted to see Zambia on the map. So I reached out to my lecturer, Dr. Mwea, and he helped me put together an event. I had my friends, my classmates that were taking intellectual property as well. And we put together an event. We hosted it at American Corner at CBU. There was a lady, Miss Mutale, I think she's still there. She gave us the space to host it. And we held our first World Intellectual Property Day at the Copper Belt University. I submitted my event, and Zambia was now on the map. And I was like, yes, we are on the map. We are seen. We are part of World Intellectual Property Day. And for me, that was my win. That was a success. I'm just like, that's what I wanted. And I didn't plan on going into IP and just starting an organization. But then after school, because now I'm done with school, it's my final year. With school, you have the resources, you have the people, you can put together an event. Now I'm out of campus. I don't have the same resources. And World Intellectual Property Day is around the corner. And so I started reaching out to people. One of the first things I did out of school was have a radio event, because I'm just like, Zambia needs to celebrate World Intellectual Property Day. And then I'm reaching out to these news stations and I'm saying, I'm not here to advertise, but did you know that it's World Intellectual Property Day? You should be covering this on your news. You should be covering this as a story, you know? And I'm sending them this proposition. Then we did Radio Christian Voice the following year. Then we started doing like radio tours year after year. And within the resources that I could do, wrote articles in the newspaper. So it evolved out of that and then grew into an organization. Then I was like, okay, let me just actually register this and use this as a platform to empower others and talk to others about their rights. So that's how IP Hub Zambia was born, simply out of passion and just trying to tell people about their rights and empower people. And then we started doing book events and whatever opportunity there is, just talk about intellectual property. Did a couple of things in high schools. I'm like, we need to prepare you because you're going into society, but you should have that mindset to know I have options of entrepreneurship, of innovation, and it can yield me benefits. So that's how my work around IP began.
You say something very interesting and something I live by that most people don't like is options.
Yes.
I like having options. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that I can dream big. I say the sky is the starting point for me as Aka. And because over the years I've had different options and opportunities to explore, that's why I have a mindset of saying I can do anything I want. I can follow this path and be successful because of the options. Like, there are options. It might not look like that, but if you have that mindset, you can have options. What do you think about our culture and options? Like, does it align? I'm skeptical now because when I'm done with university, I just graduated. They're telling me about these two paths. Like, you only have three options. It's either you do this, either you do this, it's either you do this. And I'm like, what do you mean I only have three options? I have 100 options. I only picked two. So what do you mean I have three options? So, yeah. What do you think about our culture and options?
I, now that you brought it up, I really think we've limited ourselves in a way. I mean, we've let our school system describe the career path you're going to take. If you start with business administration, you're expected to work in business administration. You're in engineering, you're expected to work in a certain way. But with options, it allows you, and I think university degrees should not limit you to a particular career path, but should be a platform that allows you to explore. What university and education need to do is give us a mindset and the tools that we need to work anywhere and to do anything. You could be a teacher and work in the corporate world. The corporate world needs teachers. You could be a teacher. I've seen people who are teachers and they've worked in places where they're now developing curriculums for like learning institutions, like even corporate institutions have learning curriculums that they want their employees to develop. You need people that understand how to develop curriculums. You need, I've seen people who have studied history but are working in a corporate institution. I'm like, why are you working in a corporate institution? I've encountered people who have PhDs and are working in banks because they know how to do research. They know how to use data because they've done like things like thesis and projects. And so we should not limit ourselves because of what you've studied. And it's not a good thing because with diversity, you bring so many different ideas, and we should learn to embrace diversity and not box everyone up. If we box everyone up and say, all the engineers need to work in this, all the architects need to only do this, we are limiting our potential. We are limiting the power that diversity brings, because most successful organizations or most successful teams come when there's diversity. Diversity is in different ways. It could be our backgrounds, gender, ethnicity, and we should learn to embrace diversity, learn to embrace our differences and come together and just be like, okay, this must be interesting. You're a teacher and yet you're in the corporate world. How did you find yourself here? It shows that somebody has tenacity to break the boundaries. It shows that somebody has the mindset of growth. They have a growth mindset. Seeing somebody who's a professional, let's say soccer player, move into a corporate space, or a soccer player move into doing research, doing a podcast, you'd be like, there's something special about this guy. How did you leverage off being soccer player and then coming into this space? What makes you so different? It just shows that they have that discipline. You can see that these different things that make them special allow them to stand out in the different spaces. So our society, I would say, we're very, in some of the spaces, not in all spaces, in some of the spaces, we are narrow-minded, and we classify people. And if you are this, you need to do this. If you've done that, you need to do that. But we need to be more open to diversity and break the barriers, and don't allow your university degree to define your next 50 years, but allow it to be a platform to grow and have that growth mindset.
I like what you've been saying, and I'd like to touch base on a few stuff because we are reframing. I'd like to say I had a guest, she's in the academic world, and she's also part of the SOCI, by the way. And she talked about how we compared and talked about the differences between the education system in Zambia and the Western world, specifically America. And she talked about how their education system is so wide that it gives their people or youths an option to try out different things. It's like it's your first degree. You eventually have to pick what you want to major in. But the first and second years are like you trying out and you experiencing and learning different things everywhere just to test and see if that's what you want. And that's where we lag in Zambia in our education system is if you're studying business admin, majority of everything you're going to learn would just be business-wise. And that's all. It's like you won't learn anything else to try out different areas and industries just to have a test and see if you are interested. Then you talked about teaching. Like if you're a teacher, does it mean you have to be, like if you study teaching, does it mean you have to be a teacher, right? Yeah. One interesting thing is one of my best friends did education. She just graduated as well. And I told her that you're studying education. You're not studying teaching.
Yes.
You gotta get a degree in education. That doesn't mean you have to be a teacher.
Yeah.
Yes. And I feel like it's so narrow-minded to think just because you're in the school of education, you have to be a teacher. No, like education means you're in a school of education, you majored in geography and English. But you could actually do different things with that information apart from teaching. Yeah. Teaching is just one of the options you could do. It's just one of them. There's so much you could do with that particular degree. So it's just intriguing, to be honest.
Yeah. And I think those are some of the things they don't tell us outright. And we need more of this information. We need lecturers to tell us this, to say it's just an option. You do not have to wait until the government opens up positions and everyone is trying to get into the government. Everyone is trying to get into the government to be a teacher, but education should be a platform for you to share your skills, your ideas in whatever space you're in. It may be in front of a blackboard. It can be behind a laptop. It would be in front of people, but allows you to open up and share the brilliant ideas that you have and not just limit you. And you should not be defined by your profession and just, oh, I'm just this. You are not just your profession. You are so much more and you bring so much more and you could do so much. Yeah.
Now that we're talking about some of the gaps we have in our education system and the mindset we have, I'm so interested to know like some of the gaps that are there in the intellectual property industry in Zambia. Like what local businesses and entrepreneurs, what should they know and what don't they know?
Okay. So some of the gaps I see, and we still have a long way to go. I would say the first one is understanding what intellectual property is, understanding the different forms of intellectual property, and understanding how to leverage intellectual property. So let me start by understanding the gap of understanding what intellectual property is. So the first thing is it's not taught in our schools as much, or it's not outrightly taught if you're not in doing a particular course. So the first gap is people do not know what it is, even from a high school level, but we do see it. You see like the symbol of the copyright, the C in a circle, but you do not know what it is. You see the TM, you do not know what it is. So that's the number one gap. Because you do not know what it is, it's easy for us to infringe on one another's rights. So you find a situation where people do not respect each other's rights. People can easily get someone else's CDs, copy them, share music without understanding that the act that I'm doing is infringing on somebody else's rights, because I'm just getting somebody else's music, putting it on a CD or copying it or sharing it. I'm not getting the proper rights in the right way. I am refraining the owner from getting the economic benefits or the profits from this. I'm getting someone else's textbooks. I used to do this in school as well. So I used to get on the other side as well. A lecturer's textbook and make copies. Just go to the copy center. Just like, oh, it's one kwacha per page. Make copies, give it amongst your friends. And because we do not know that we're infringing somebody else's rights, we're in a place where the person will not be able to get as much profits. And now they think they're not profitable. They can't release much or publish more books. Or now we're stealing from them practically. And that's number one. That's the biggest gap. We do not know. And it's understandable because we have not been taught this in class. So everyone would go about blindly making copies and sharing this information. The second gap is that with that, we do not understand the different forms of IP, such as the trademarks, the patents, and the purpose they play in society. So with this information, you're able to understand that intellectual property helps drive innovation and helps drive economic growth in a country. Why I say this is with intellectual property rights, for example, a patent, people perceive a patent as a simple prohibitive right, as someone saying no one should copy my idea. But then patents drive innovation in that they help the person that is doing that research and development to want to improve products. They want to advance products. They want to advance in technology in different products in different spaces. And once you get that patent, you disclose it to the whole world and other people can build off that. So with patents, you're able to still share that idea and people build on that. So when you see we're not patenting as many ideas, it's a little worrisome because people are not disclosing their ideas. People are not innovating and protecting as well. So it's like you're now refraining and sharing your ideas from the whole world. For instance, the telephone was patented way back, and you now see people are building and creating smartphones and creating better phones. It's not like the patent restricted innovation, but a patent is also able to spur innovation and drive innovation forward and economic growth. So that's something we do not understand and leverage on as Zambians. And the other thing is that intellectual property rights are more than just rights that somebody owns, more than just I own a patent, I own a trademark. But there are so many options with intellectual property rights that they give you options to license out, franchise, sell your idea. And I've not been able to see much around that, especially in Zambia, where we have young people licensing out their ideas. Just because you have this idea does not mean, okay, now I want to be the CEO, I'm going to start up a business. There are people who are just good at starting up ideas, like, oh, bringing up ideas. And for them, that innovation and being creative in a space and understanding that I have this brilliant idea, I can license it out. So you're now leveraging off that IP. You don't have to go and look for money and everything. Just sell your idea. Did you know that you could sell your idea? Did you know that you could franchise out your idea, or you could simply go to a company and license it out? So these are the other options that come with intellectual property that I feel we do not know, we do not fully understand, and the options we need to know around intellectual property is that you have these beautiful options. You have so many options around it. And once people know that, I think it would be a game changer for us. You know, I would want to see young people bringing out their ideas, young people building their ideas, young people selling out their ideas, young people negotiating. Go to these big companies and say, you know what, I noticed your company has this problem and I'm able to develop this solution for you and it'll cost you this much and I'll give you the rights to this idea. So those are some of the gaps that I've noticed in the space of IP.
I like that you mentioned that you, every time you have an idea, it doesn't mean you actually have to start up the business and run. Like, you could just be at ideation and always sell your idea to the next person because they have capacity and resources to actually just start up the whole idea. So it's very interesting. Something I needed to hear, to be honest, because I always have so many ideas.
Yes.
Like, yeah, how do I can't do everything. So how do I package that to sell it to other people to do it? I like that. That's my key takeaway already. Already, that's my key takeaway.
Okay, so, that's good.
I just realized that you are part of the cabinet of Global Intellectual Property Alliance. Can you tell me more about that? I can't believe I was saying to pronounce intellectual. Yeah.
No, but I don't know what happened. I couldn't pronounce the word franchise. I'm like, what franchise? I don't know if I had to just like my brain.
It's embarrassing us just now, Lord. But yeah, we're good.
My God, what's happening? What's happening?
I was like, yeah, intellect. Oh, God. Could you tell me more of what that role entails?
Oh, yeah. So I work with an amazing group of people who are passionate about intellectual property. And GLIPR, to make it easier, GLIPR, Global Intellectual Property Alliance, I work on the board and cabinet with them in terms of bringing intellectual property to the whole world. And it was founded by Frank Scott, who's based in the US. And we're actually about to clock 2 years with Global Intellectual Property Alliance.
Yay!
So, yay! It's an organization that actually focuses on unleashing the potential of intellectual property to improve everyone's lives. And I love that it transcends beyond borders and politics, and they use intellectual property to empower people's lives for the better and talk about more sustainable future for the planet, for now and future generations. That's what GLIPR does. And my role there, I also lead the Africa region alongside my colleague, Bertine, who's in Rwanda. And we together bring together people who are in the space of IP, who are in the space of creatives, who are educators. Anybody is welcome to Global Intellectual Property Alliance. And we bring them together to share what IP is and how they can leverage of IP and creating local impact. So we have three pillars in GLIPR, which are intellectual property awareness and education, IP and the ecosystem collaboration, IP and diversity and inclusion. So with this, I found myself working with amazing people across the world, across the globe, doing great things in IP and having conversations, having projects around intellectual property to see how we can empower our communities. And with GLIPR, we always say, think globally, act locally. So we're always looking at what projects can we do on a local level that will impact the globe. And it's a nonprofit, it's diverse, it's open, and everyone is a volunteer. And we all have our belief in the power that IP bring. And We want to share resources, educational resources. We have conversations between private and public sectors to enhance the collaboration across innovation and create an ecosystem that allows people, entrepreneurs, and everyone to thrive.
I hope you realize you're so dynamic. Like, just us having this conversation is teaching me how dynamic and how you work with people in like cross culture. And I would say, like, the podcast, I'm interviewing people in this cross culture and I'm starting to learn a lot of things. You have, like, for you, it's also cross culture working with different cultures, with different individuals, dynamic, different, who are thriving in different sectors around the world. Can you just tell me more about how that experience is shaping you?
Ooh, I've learned a lot. It makes me feel like the world is, I used to see it as a very big, big, big case, but not so much anymore. And I like that I've been able to work with people in different capacities. And number one, they're just people as well.
Yes.
True. Yeah. I think that because I was like, oh, I'm just this young girl from Zambia. And learning to work with different people has also allowed me to understand, like, oh, they're just people. They're like you and me. They share the same idea. And coming back to that, when we talked about networking and community, to say there's always something that will bring people together and build on that. And with the Global Intellectual Property Alliance, it was intellectual property. And when we came together, you're like, you're a fan of IP. I'm a fan of IP. Let's do this together. Yes. And once that happened, I then started breaking down these barriers. And I'm just like, okay, yeah, let's talk about IP. No matter where you're coming from, we have this common goal together. You realize that certain challenges are not just common for Zambia. So they are common in many other countries. And now you start learning, what are you doing in your country? How are you solving this problem? Can I implement that in my country? And that's something I really, really appreciate, even with the Global Intellectual Property Alliance, is it brings together a community with people and you learn what someone is doing in Colombia, in India, in Nigeria, in Ghana, and you're like, okay, can I implement this? So for me, working with different diversified people, what it has been like, it has been mind-opening. It has been beautiful just to witness that. I've had to change my mindset around a lot of things. It has been stretching, and I've learned to take on new ideas. I've learned to challenge myself in a new way. I've learned to be more open to the world and be like, oh, all right, this is what's actually happening out there, to have an open mindset. I've learned to communicate with different people of different calibers and understand that, all right, you have a high caliber, you have all this portfolio, you've done all these things, but we, at the end of the day, we respect one another. At the end of the day, we want to build something together. And yeah, the world is not as scary as it seems, and people are actually friendly out there, and people want to create an impact, and you find that there are similar problems across the world, and sometimes what has worked in another country would work in your country, and there are so many opportunities to learn and share. So that's what working with diversified people has taught me. Yeah.
I like that you mentioned that the world is not a scary place. I remind myself that all the time. It also brings me to asking, what have you learned from your travels? And I know you're also studying your MBA in America. Like, what have you learned from your experience that you think and know to say, I'd like to bring this back home to Zambia?
Because I'm still in school, some of the things, there are so many things. there are so many things I'd like to bring back. There are so many things. Let's talk about technology. But I think what has
Yes.
really one thing that has I think people's mindsets and attitudes are different. When we come and collaborate, it's a bit different. So some of the things I'd really want to bring back, I think how business is done. Okay, this one is, let me talk about my university. My university is WP Carey, and they say business is personal, and they mean it. They mean it when they say business is personal. So the faculty, the lecturers, the staff, they mean it when they say business is personal. They make it a point to know you. They make it a point to actually know you as a student, to support you, to give you the resources. One of my lecturers came to class on day two, and she was like, "I'm going to make it a point to know each of your names." And we were about 56. And the next class, she came and she was like, "This is you, this is you, this is you, this is you." She knew all 56 of us in the next lecture. So they make it a point when they say business is personal to know you as a person. And they even the ground for everyone, they give everyone the same opportunity to grow, to harness their ideas. They give everyone a listening space and they do not box you up. They embrace diversity, collaboration, and there's a lot of structure. That's one thing I would like to bring back. Make things a little different, even the ground, make people heard, make people seen, more structure, technology, tools. There have been a lot of tools that I've been using in class that I'm just like, this would be great if we had this back home, especially for people in university, looking at the resources. I'm like, wow, if we had this back home, this would be a game changer for me. It would have been a game changer for me. So those are some of the things I would like to bring back. I think the people's mindset, people's attitude towards business, towards life. Yeah, I wouldn't, yeah, just share around. You know what? You don't really, because I think sometimes we're more about hierarchy and structure
Yes.
and
Oh,
communist and
about
all of that.
respect. I want to take back up the thing about respect. I feel I would say I'm not saying don't respect people. I'm saying it's how we demonstrate it. It's how we boxed what respect is, right? In our culture compared to others. To say, because I can respect you, like for us in our language, we have different ways you show respect. But I could just do that just for hearsay and actually not mean it, you know? So it's, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think, yeah. So coming back to the things I would bring back home, I think business is personal is one of the things I would like to bring back home. Certain resources, certain tools would empower us, especially students, and just how certain programs as well. My school has a program where they have career coaching, training. That's something I didn't have when I was graduating. I didn't know what I needed to do. I didn't know how to write my resume, but career coaching has really helped me. So those are some of the things I would like to bring back. Yeah.
I want to say, I want us to do a whole session or article we can share about tools for students that
Ooh.
I just think it's very important. I've
Yeah.
seen the difference and I've seen how boxed we are in our universities and just the gap in information for students. So yeah, we should do something to do. To talk about tools, could be an article, could be a whole workshop online, just diving into a few tools that we could use because there are a lot and I also didn't know. I'm like, you can use that. And
Yeah.
I like working with a lot of tools that I'm learning right now and it's just really interesting. It makes life a little easier and better.
Yeah. tools are amazing because they make life easier and they make things easier. I know, like at the Copper Belt University, some of the things I would have loved to see tools where you could properly access different things in one portal, in one platform, things that don't crash. This works. This is actually, and it makes education fun. It makes it less a hassle and flawless, and you enjoy going to school, going for classes. And yeah, I would want to see more of that. Tools, resources made available for many students like us.
With that being said, we have a closing tradition.
Ooh, which is... We're about to close already?
I know! We have a closing tradition.
Oh my God.
Oh my goodness, precious. you're gonna destroy my train of thought, but we have a closing tradition, and before I ask you the last question, hopefully I'd like you to ask me a question.
I get to ask you a question.
I know, right?
Okay, I think I got it. If you were the president of Zambia, what would you change?
Oh, that's good. I have a couple of things I would like to change. The education system. I'm just starting from primary to higher education, just reaffirming what education looks like. I do think the current regime is doing a good job with the lower education. And I also would like to change what education is in terms of, as a country, we're more focused on formal education, that we leave way for nothing when it comes to informal education. What you're taught when you volunteer, what you're taught when you have the initiative to learn on your own, like what's the value of that? And invest more in trade centers in Zambia so that a lot of people can have access, because not everybody can afford formal education. I have to say again, the current regime is doing a good job. We could do better. We could have more, because there's money running around in these banks to do with education. Mm-hmm. It's just we as citizens and as business owners are lagging when it comes to using those resources. So we have this money that the government is saying, if you want to implement this, you can have access to this money. We're just not ready to receive that money. I like saying, is your house ready to receive for what you're asking for? So most businesses, people are not ready to receive that. And also that's just showing a gap on something we can work on. So yeah, I'm really passionate about the education system, the employment. So I'm an SDG 8 person. And so it's about economic growth. So I know if we invest in education, not just the formal education, but the informal education, we give everybody options. Those that know they can't thrive, informal education, you know you can't be a doctor, but you're really good at carpentry. So you can actually go to a school that teaches you about carpentry, but also just doesn't narrow your mind to say you have to be a sole trader. It also gives you the capacity to actually build that business. So you can be like a big furniture store in Zambia that's supplying to government desks and everything. Like why does, and it also comes back to something you say, it's structure. One thing we're lacking as a country, as individuals, as businesses, is structure. Why most things are going to foreigners? It's because they have structure, they have the tools, they have the system. So is our education system giving this to individuals, entrepreneurs? Is it giving them the option? Like, can I go to a trade center and learn about home economics? But are they giving me the tools to say, you don't have to be hired in the hospitality industry. You can actually build something for yourself. So yeah, very passionate about education and research. Ooh. That's the second thing I would invest in as a country. We don't make research-based decisions. We make assumptions. 10 million youths are not hired. Where do we have this data? What are they not hired in? What capacities, or what did they study? What programs do they have? Are we saying we have 2 million nurses? Where do we have this information? Why are we just making assumptions that 1,000 nurses graduated, so it means it's adding to the pool? What pool? Where is this data, so that even as people come with new businesses, new innovations, we're making data-based decisions as a country, right? It's a lot of assumptions going on, and something I'm really passionate about. I never thought I'd ever be passionate about research, because it's not my strength. But I'm at a point now where I'd say I want to make my house ready for business, right? So that's my business. But my realize that my business is research based. I saw that I've been making a lot of assumptions to say people don't want to invest in themselves. Where's the data? Mm-hmm. What research have you done on that? So now that I'm asking myself those questions, I'm asking people those questions as saying, I would really want to invest. I would create a whole research department, a whole ministry just on research. And do we publish this research? Do we do this about this research? Which portal can we go to? Can you go on Google Scholar and find the research in Zambia? Because all that, I feel like if we invest so much in our education system and try to reform it, it also builds back to research as well. If we invest so much in research as a country, we could actually make decisions that would last 50 years. Because a good example would be the roads. Every 5 years, they're building roads and expanding roads. How is that okay for the country? Like, you did not estimate that the economy, that the population would grow this much in 5 years. Like, why isn't the capacity for the specific road 20 years, 30 years? But it's like only capacity for 2 years, because after 2 years, we need it expanded. We need new ones. So yeah, those are the things I would do differently. Yeah.
I like that. I was just like, yes, I'm taking notes. Seems like you had a whole list.
Yes, but I'm very passionate about the education system. Yes. I'm very passionate about research. Because I'm having a lot of conversations with people, and they're like, oh no, it's because of this. And I'm like, do you have facts, or are we making assumptions? Mm-hmm. Yes. Because I ask myself that when I make an assumption. Yeah. Is it true, or do you think it's true? Because we can all be thinking about the same thing differently. So yeah, we'd do great as a country if we invested so much.
Yeah.
I wish research should be on our budget to say this is going into research and development for the country, and we could see where we're going. Because research is also why I have a problem with a lot of things in Zambia. Yes. Because we're having load shedding. For those who are not Zambians, this is power blackouts, right? We're having load shedding. When I was 15, that's when we had the biggest one, like in 2015. And like, it was like really bad, right? But it was just for 3 months. You're telling me that no one predicted that climate change, load shedding would increase in the past 10 years? So no research was done, no predictions were made. As a country, how is this okay? As an individual, as ACA, how are you making this okay? So I also like the individuality. I like to take responsibility and then start asking questions to say, what role are you playing in this?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my
Which
list.
is,
I'm done now.
I know.
I really went all passionate about
I
it.
know. I'm just like, okay, I should be hosting you on a podcast, you know? We should do a whole interview of you.
Soon. I did
Yeah.
one at the beginning. When I'm 20 episodes in, you can host me, which
Okay.
is soon
Yeah.
because yeah, I've done a lot of recordings already, and I'm like, we're almost 20 episodes. So yeah, at the 20 mark, I'm reaching out to say, "Hi, Precious. Do you want to interview me? What are your questions?" So that was a very, yeah, I like the change of scenario in that question. Like no one has asked me that, which is so good.
Oh, yeah, that's
So one of my favorite question is, what do you look forward to?
Oh, what I look forward to is I want to see, I look forward to seeing more people share their ideas. I look forward to seeing Zambia out there more. I look forward to a Zambian economy where we export, a Zambian economy where ideas are licensed out to other countries, Zambia where we have Zambians creating global impact, because I know we have amazing talent. I know we have big minds, and you do not have to be out there to be successful, but I want to see many youths launch their ideas, many startups come out from idea stage to conceptualizations, to pilot, to launching their ideas. So that's one thing I look forward to. I want to see those ideas come to life. I want to see the many people that have been like, should I do this? I want to see innovation. I look forward to seeing our economy being spurred by innovation. I'm looking forward to that. That's something I really look forward to. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Precious, for making the time to jump on board and have this conversation with me. We've never met physically, but we've had like really good conversations the past few days, and you're such a
Yeah.
vibe. I always say this, and what I've learned from this conversation is you can actually just change the direction of your life. You don't have to be in a box. You
Yeah.
can give yourself grace and learn and go against the norm or the status quo. So I hope everybody gets that. And I'm so excited. I have a feeling we'll be working on something pretty soon, but I'm so excited.
Girl, yeah.
But I'm so excited that people will get to listen to this conversation and they'll get to follow your work. And they'll actually see the different opportunities we have in Zambia, things that are raw, untouched, and feel
Yeah.
different. And they'll get inspired to try that out because you've created a platform where it's okay to try out something new and you're actually showing it's possible, it can work, and you can
Yes.
grow it. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This has been an amazing conversation. Like, I've loved every bit of it, and I hope it inspires somebody. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is the end of our episode with Precious. I hope you liked it. And if you want to learn more about Precious and her work, you can go into our bio. We have all her information. If this inspired you, please, please, please share it with a friend. Please subscribe. Give us reviews. Give me feedback. And we're happy to engage and talk with you guys. But thank you so much. And that's it from us. Bye.